Before we begin with the show, a commentary that I'd like to share with you regarding the Jussie Smollett case. Now, the Jussie Smollett case is one where he got arrested this week, the Empire Star, in regard to a fake police report. First of all, if you are a listener to the show, you should probably have listened to episode number 75, of which I did on 12/9/2018, entitled Calling Out and Challenging the Social Justice Warriors. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the Social Justice Warriors really blew this one this time, and they have egg all over their face. But the best way to describe this is the way that Trevor Noah, a person who I don't necessarily listen to on a daily basis, described the whole thing a few days ago on his show, of which I would like to share with you here.
So Jussie is potentially going to prison for a while, and in his wake, he has over everyone. Think about it. Members of the gay community are emotionally terrorized over something that turned out to be a hoax. Trump supporters are upset about being falsely accused. And Democratic candidates are tying themselves into knots trying to walk back their initial statements, calling this a modern day lynching. Nobody won in this thing.
And then Trevor Noah says this about how our community is advancing because of this.
Nobody won. But there is a silver lining. When this started out, it was a story about people who hated Jussie Smollett because he was black and gay. But now, people hate him because he's In other words, they're judging him on the content of his character and not the color of his skin. And that, my friends, is progress. What heights will he?
For February 23rd, 2019, welcome to the 86th episode of the Superfly Oz podcast. My name is Stan Fitchman. I am Superfly Oz himself, here giving you insider perspective. Hold on a second. Trustworthy insider perspective of what is going on around the world, across the United States, and here in my corner of the world, the McCully section of downtown Honolulu, state of Hawaii, United States of America. Welcome once again to the podcast. I hope that intro was entertaining for you as well as informative. Hey, just before we get started with our show, because we're jam-packed today with a good show, I want to give you a little bit of touch base as to how to get a hold of me, Stan Fitchman, Superfly Oz himself. So please email me at sjfhawaii@gmail.com, sjfhawaii@gmail.com. Put something into the subject line, put your thoughts or your manao into the body, and if it is good enough, clean enough, and concise enough, I will go ahead and read that off on a future episode. Our website, www.politicshawaii.com, is still active, and you can still go to it, even though there's an under-construction sign there right now. You can click on the link below and go right to the Podomatic site where all the podcasts are still housed right now. Still working on that new vision and new image for the podcast right now, and we are just about there, actually. So stay tuned. There's going to be a big splash about it when we get that out. So welcome again to the podcast. We've got a jam-packed show here, so we're not going to dilly-dally too much in regard to other commentary. We're going to go right into it. Today's show is a new interview that I had recently with Mr. Bixby Ho, who is the former vice chair of the Oahu Democratic Party here in the state of Hawaii. He comes on the show once in a while, and we converse quite a bit, actually, between myself and him in regard to how things are going on in politics and the issues that are going on. So he came into Superfly Oz Central just this last week, and he gave more of his manao and his understanding of what is going on around here in the state of Hawaii for your information and enjoyment. So without further ado, here's the interview with Bixby Ho, former vice chair of the Oahu Democratic Party, here on the Superfly Oz podcast. Bixby, I want to thank you very much for joining us here again at Superfly Oz Central.
Thanks, Dan. Always a pleasure.
So let's get started with just updating you and updating the audience in regard to what has been happening with you. Of course, the last time we spoke was back in August of 2018 when you were supporting Governor David Ige for governor of the state of Hawaii. As we all know, he won the primary and then he went on to win the general pretty handedly, actually. So he is now on Ige Part 2. What are your thoughts in regard to that?
Hey, it's not bad, actually. You know, I think that you know, he has greatly learned from the last time he was governor, and, you know, I think that he found his voice.
So with Governor Ige getting into office for the second term, he had his State of the State address a few weeks back. What are your thoughts in regard to that speech? I know that there's a lot of perspectives in regard to that speech that came out afterward.
He actually hit a lot of points, you know, that he mentioned in his re-election, and which is a very plausible thing. You know, only problem is how is he going to pay for it? You know, the usual questions that, of course, the legislature will ask. But, of course, with his second budget, I think that it will actually outline much of the policies that he wishes to outline this year.
So let me get back to that question about paying for things and basically coming up with a new philosophy, I guess you could say, direction of Hawaii. As you know, on this show, I keep on braging our leaders here in the state of Hawaii about actually coming up with a direction for the state of Hawaii. Did Governor Ige actually come up with a direction and a, I guess you could say, a focus for Hawaii going forward into the 21st century through his speech and through his campaign?
Well, in his campaign, yes. As for his State of the State, I think he was just reaching out to the fact that he was just following up on the goals that he set, you know, of 2020 in terms of regrowing our own agriculture, you know, as opposed to, you know, just, I guess, farming outside of Hawaii. So that was a good reach. Affordable housing, lowering our homelessness numbers, but of course, again, that will only lower a short term. You can probably see it pick up again in the next year or so, but we'll see.
So one of the things that I guess there was a criticism that was put upon the governor right after his State of the State address was the fact that he came up with pretty expensive sounding programs like preschool or pre-K program for children. I guess there was a little bit more of monies involved in regard to other things. Did the governor really start to make a shift more toward the left, or is this more of just kind of pacifying the different constituencies in the Democratic Party and here in Hawaii in general from that speech and from his plans?
Pre-K honestly works. I'm a product of pre-K, and I'm sure 1.5 trillion politicians are as well, too. You know, Governor Ige touched on pre-K because, you know, he honestly saw it work. The First Lady, as you well aware, is a educator herself, so she knew exactly what the pros and cons of being, you know, a pre-K student is. And so that was pretty easy sell for the legislature to push.
So let's talk about the legislature just a little bit. We're now in the middle of February here. And where do you think things were going to go in the big square building? Just kind of your thoughts in regard to it as kind of a person who pays attention to this, just like the audience here on the Superfly House podcast.
I honestly think that with this new legislature, you know, now that they're asking for more accountability, they want to know where the dollars are going to, and I give full credence to our legislature for doing that. You know, why didn't they do it before? But of course, say again, it could just be their way of saying, hey, we are still in charge of the purse, but yet we also want to make sure there's a check and balance. So the governor, of course, has to play into it. And I really hope that this works out for them instead of just say, yeah, we're going to follow the money and, of course, become a rubber stamp come May 4th.
So very interesting that the legislature is taking a much more oversight view of the governor's budget as well as the overall budget of the state of Hawaii, you know, Sylvia Luke over in the House, and of course Donovan Dela Cruz at the Senate, who are the leaders of the fiscal offices or the fiscal committees over there, have really come out and really said that we have to watch every dime and make sure that everything is accounted for. What do you think about this shift? Because in the past, and Bixby and I, you know that we've been here forever here in Hawaii, that this type of language from the legislature, especially when you have a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor, it never has been said this way. So I'm kind of wondering from your perspective if there's been a real shift in kind of like how the legislature looks at the budget, or is this just because the legislature and their leaders, they backed the opponent, which was Colleen Hanabusa for governor. She lost, and so now they're having to just give Governor Ige a hard time. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't think it's so much of the Colleen lost, David won scenario. I think it's about time the legislature actually woke up and heard what the voice of the people was saying. Be more accountable for your spending, because, hey, it's our tax dollars, not just yours, that is being put into this. So we have to realize what goes into it. You know, yes, Donovan Dela Cruz and Sylvia Luke are the two, dare I say, power horses now in the legislature, you know, controlling both the Ways and Means and the Finance Committees. So, but at the same time, it's just being accountable and, you know, actually listening to what the people want, and it's being, you know, being more financially sound, fiscally sound, and so forth.
So let's move along. We're going to go into stuff that you're actually getting yourself involved in more. I know that in the past you were the chair of the Oahu County Democratic Party. And I hear, you know, you're no longer that right now, but I hear that you want to get back into that a little bit. Tell us a little bit about your desire to get back into party politics.
Well, for starters, I guess it just comes through fruition for me. I wanted to become chair because of the fact that it's a very fun position to, you know, be able to continue the work that I'm already doing with the legislature, the governor, the elected officials, including the congressional delegation, working side by side with them, understanding that, you know, just because there is a party, we also know that the party can provide support for our elected officials, regardless of what side of the Democratic Party they are on, left side, right side, center, Bernie, Hillary, whatnot, you know. And I think that being a party chair, you know, although you have to realize to just put the hat down and say, hey, okay, I'm going to just be equal-sided, it should be a lot easier to, you know, work with them once again.
So that's very interesting. And a little bit of background for the listeners here. You know, we always see the head of a party, which is a governor or a president or whatever, and we always see them front face. But the work of actually governing goes not only in the governing part, but also in the political party part. And the political parties themselves have leadership, chairs, vice chairs, members, etc., that really do, and they can make a big difference in regard to the philosophy of the candidates and philosophies of the parties themselves going into government itself. Would you agree with that? And would you agree with that, Bixby, in regard to the power of the chair and the power of the members themselves really do dictate where we go in Hawaii and in the United States?
Well, per se, we don't dictate. I think we more advise, you know, provide our own insight, you know, as party leaders. We're there to support, of course, our party electeds, but at the same time, the party electeds turn to us in ways of providing them support through reelection. If they need bills to be voiced on, then we are there for them. There's other keys that we have. And for me personally, when I was, even as I was vice chair of the county party, it was much more easier to just work with the elected one-on-one and say, hey, what do you need from us? Let us know what you need from us, and in turn, we will tell you what we need from you. And by far, it has worked very successfully. I know everybody's like, oh, party of the big tent, but at the same time, you just tell yourself, it's a party of the people.
Interesting. And I think, again, for the listeners here, they should probably understand that it's many people, you know, many people make the work of our governing happen here. And so Bixby will be running for that seat in, when is it again? March, right?
May the 4th.
Well, I got that date wrong. So, you know, don't trust me. Trust Bixby. May the 4th over at the Democratic Party. I guess it's their yearly convention, or is it the Oahu convention?
It's the Oahu County Convention. They elect their chair every 2 years. So on the odd year, so this will be the year they elect their chair.
Well, that's good to know. So let's talk a little bit about the Democratic Party itself in just kind of like a general sense. So as we all know, Congress flipped over, and or not all of Congress flipped over. It was only the House of Representatives that flipped from Republican to Democratic leadership. And one of the big news stories out of there is this young group of women, mostly, who are very vocal in regard to their, I guess, their socialist tendencies to move the United States more toward a socialist, or as the right would say, you know, communist type of tendencies. And right now we also have a bunch of people across the United States, even here in Hawaii, we have a presidential candidate here, Tulsi Gabbard, who's going to be running for president on the Democratic Party side, Cory Booker and others. And so I wanted to get some insight from you, Bixby, in regard to, where does the Democratic Party stand right now? Is there a real anchor in regard to philosophy, or are we really now looking for a party that is looking for that anchor of philosophy?
I think we're looking for that anchor, Stan, honestly, because we have, for the first time, there's going to be a trillion people running for president from the Democratic Party side. Because all of them all have the same mission, to end the regime of Donald J. Trump. But here's the real problem, is who looks better presidential, who is able to pick up that voice of the presidency in a heartbeat, and at the same time understanding what it takes to be president. You know, Donald Trump once said he couldn't stand being behind the gates of the White House and would do anything just for an ice cream cone. Of course, saying that could have been a two-scoop thing, but who knows.
So with that, you know, is it going to be where these presidential candidates are coming out and they're making their philosophies, and all, or the quote-unquote vocal leaders of Congress, which would be Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others, are they going to be the ones who are going to set this anchor, or is there going to actually be a much more inclusive, I guess you could say, inclusive discussion with all different variances of the Democratic Party? Everybody from, I think you could say, the Blue Dog Democrat all the way to the Socialist Democrat, and really try to figure out where that anchor is? Or are we really just, as people here in the United States, are we just really ready to just say, okay, whoever is the most vocal person in that whole party actually gets the ability to set that anchor, and then that's where that party goes, and if they become, you know, leaders of this country under the White House, that's where the country goes?
At the end of the day, I think it's going to be just about issues. You know, yeah, I would like to see somebody who can take out Donald Trump, but of course that could be any of the candidates, including that of Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, who has been pretty vocal in the last couple of days, despite the fact that she had announced her own candidacy for president in the middle of a huge snowstorm. Well, that wasn't really a snowstorm, but that's just me talking because I've seen snow. But, you know, there's the voice and there's the voice of reason, right? You know, and Alexandria Cortez Ocasio, she brings that voice because she is young, you know, she's vibrant. Everybody wants to, you know, grab the mic and, you know, go all out. But at the end of the day, it's ultimately how they command that voice and where that voice is going to. And, of course, again, who knows, even Maisie Hirono might put in her name, because after being called out by the president the other day in El Paso, Texas. But, of course, again, Maisie will probably, you know, refute that and say, no, my work is best in the Senate where I can just gavel hard and knock some heads in.
Yes, that is true. Even if you agree or disagree with Maisie Hirono, and I'll be honest with you, I've got friends on both sides of that aisle or regarding agreement or disagreement as to how she is these days for representing the state of Hawaii. I think that having everybody in the world jump into the clown car that is the presidential race for the primary in the Democratic Party is probably not the best idea in the world. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of them. But I noted that you had mentioned Amy Klobuchar, who is a presidential candidate now. And I do know that you actually have a little bit of insight in regard to her a little bit. I know that you lived up in that part of the country for a little while, and so you probably got to know her a little bit. You want to say any words in regard to her specifically? I mean, because I don't think here in Hawaii, I think everybody's like, Amy who? I mean, you know, they can barely pronounce her name. So let's hear from you in regard to that.
Well, Amy Klobuchar and I go way back, even when she first ran for Senate. This was several years ago. She got her start as a prosecuting attorney in a little county called Hennepin County. Of course, it's not so little because it's two times the size of Honolulu County. She served her state superbly well. You know, and I, from the get-go, when I got to meet her, she was a stellar performer. You know, everybody thought that she was going to be the next David Letterman, because at the time she had a split in her teeth. And I was like, yeah, you know, when I look at candidates, I don't look with my eyes, but, you know, usually do it with my ears. And Amy resonated a lot of things that of her predecessors. Well, one predecessor in particular that stood out to me was, of course, the late Paul Wellstone. You know, and of course, you know, Hubert Humphrey, the presidential candidate in the 60s. But, you know, she resonated a lot that touched me personally. And I told her straight out, Amy, you got my vote because of the fact that your voice resonates and it touched generations like me to say, hey, that's why we have to stay involved in politics. That is why we are, you know, moving the wheels of politics towards the direction of the people rather than, you know, of course, personal interests. So that's why when she announced, I was one of the first people that said, hey, she's actually going to stand a chance. Minnesota is not going to be just known as the Rose Nyland state. It's going to be known as the Amy Klobuchar state.
Well, Minnesota is known for a lot of things, including the Hubert Humphrey state back in the days. So, you know, Minnesota does come out with some leaders for this country. And so we'll have to see if Miss Amy Klobuchar is actually able to continue that tradition. I do want to say this much about Amy Klobuchar and her initial start of the campaign, and hopefully you'll agree with this. I think that her start has actually been probably the most drama-less type of opening as a candidate for president of all of them so far. I mean, you know, it seems like all of them have come out in the Democratic Party. They've all come out, and there's always some sort of big ass drama that's going on. You know, there's Tulsi and the Russians, or Tulsi and this, or, you know, Cory Booker and being Spartacus again. You know, I mean, now I'm hearing that Cory Booker is now being vegan. You know, I guess he's a vegan, so he's always talking about, you know, the vegan diet and stuff like that, and people are just kind of going on top of that. And so I wanted to just, you know, kind of get your thoughts and say, you know, has she really started her campaign properly?
Sure, of course. You know, Amy, you know, she knows the issues. She's not afraid to fight the issues. She's not waiting for the fight to come to her. She brings the fight on. And, you know, the president himself is afraid of the fact that, hey, if Amy becomes that nominee, he's going to have a heck of a lot to fight for. As for being vegan or not, now we can say we actually have two vegans running for president. Tulsi being one, and Cory being the other. You know, I met Senator Booker about a year and a half ago at an event for Senator Mizzi Hirono, and he came off a very well-spoken, articulate gentleman. I like him because, you know, he's not as tall as me, but we'll keep that one on the back burner. You know, he opened up very nicely, you know, and however, I think that he would be best off as a running mate, you know, like Tulsi, you know, that way they at least, you know, because they're young and, you know, they'll at least get to know what it's like to be in the White House. I know a lot of people are going to be like, but number two is so, you know, mundane. You know, you saw what happened to Shan Tsutsui, you know, and so forth. It's like, well, the vice president has a little more role than just being, of course, acting president. You know, he or she will also be the president of Senate, you know, and whatnot, you know, and gets to fly on a really cool plane called Air Force Two, you know, and shoot, you know, I forgot, I heard this story once. No, it's actually on The West Wing, the famous NBC TV show about, you know, being life in the West Wing, you know, with Martin Sheen as the president again. It was kind of funny because there was a line in there that says, if you squint your left eye and turn your head to the left a little, the seal of the president of the United States, excuse me, the seal of the vice president of the United States looks more like seal of the president of the United States. I was like, I've never tried that, but I was like, hey, if Bingo Bob says it's true, then I gotta try it.
That is very interesting insight from, I guess you could say, Martin Sheen over at The West Wing, which is that NBC show. So, you know, kind of coming in a wrap up a little bit, and I do want to kind of get into completely non-political subject, but it's got to have political ramifications to it somewhere. And that is the impending arrival of Southwest Airlines as a competitor between here and the mainland, as well as an inner island competitor here in the state of Hawaii. And, you know, first of all, you know, I'm pretty sure that in your thoughts, you're very much in support, as well as probably 99% of everybody here, except for, from what I understand, Kalani Pea, who the Grammy Award winning singer here in Hawaii, who flew on Southwest Airlines and actually said that he would never fly on them ever again. Well, whatever. First of all, the fact that Southwest is actually coming here to Hawaii and going to do inner island service has brought up a lot of memories in regard to what has happened in the past, where we've had Uncle Dan basically try to protect the inner island market for locals. So that would be Aloha Hawaiian or whoever else. And now we have almost like a carte blanche welcome to Hawaii type of invitation for Southwest Airlines. We've given them a terminal over at Honolulu International Airport. Is this really a sign that we have really changed our perspective in regard to how mainland companies here come to Hawaii and how our government perceives them?
Well, you know, the darnest thing about Southwest Airlines, you know, is that they promise to keep the Hawaii in them, you know, which is really commendable. In fact, I think they did a screenshot of what they were planning to do at the terminal. Was it they were planning to keep the Mokulele brand, you know, trying to keep it local, right? They always say, oh, keep local, local, or buy local, stay local. You know, Southwest is going to be a great thing for Hawaii because we have so many people coming from all over the world, you know, and we do need another way of getting to our neighbor island because, hey, Super Ferry, yes, we are still in discussion about trying to see if it'll float again, but, you know, we do need alternatives, you know. Hawaiian, yes, I know everybody loves their POG. I love the POG too, but, you know, we need alternatives.
So it's just been very interesting. And just how much has really come out in regard to the welcome mat? I mean, seriously, it's been pretty interesting in regard to that. Any last thoughts from you as to how we should be moving forward in the next few months? I mean, we're going to have you back on the show again, definitely, Bixby. But, you know, do you see what's your political crystal ball saying in the next couple of months that we may or may not see in the news?
Well, I think what we're going to see in the next couple of months is probably more scrutiny about our wonderful boondoggle called the rail. You know, we have currently a subpoena by the FTA, by the federal government regarding the FTA's monies to the rail project in the works right now. We should see what happens. Hopefully it doesn't end up, you know, sour grapes, but hey, sour grapes turn into wonderful wine, right?
Well, with that, Bixby, I really want to thank you very much once again for coming on to the show.
With pleasure, Stan.
We're going to have you back on again in a couple of months and see what's going on, and we'll go from there as to where things go from there. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Bixby Ho.
Once again, the Superfly Oz podcast thanks Bixby Ho for coming on to the show. One final thought in regard to it for a programming note, more or less. It's always important on this show that we provide insider perspective that is not necessarily that of the regular talking heads in the political realm here in the state of Hawaii. I think that there's a lot more people out there that have a political bent on items and have an intellectual political bent on items that we really should be reaching out to and actually listening to also. With Oahu now having 1 million people on the island itself, I think it's very important now that we start really thinking outside the box in regard to how our government works, not only in the county, but also statewide. Hawaii is changing, and to get perspectives like what Bixby has said in this interview, I think is very important. And please, if you have any questions, if you have any comments about this interview, please go ahead and go to sjfhawaii@gmail.com, which is where you can get a hold of me, Stan Fitchman, Superfly Oz himself. Before we close out, a final reminder and a programming note. The reminder is, remember to listen to me, Stan Fitchman, on the AM 940 radio show on Mondays on the 808 State Update. Going to be talking about the Jesse Smollett case as well as what's been happening in the news this last weekend. Also, you can hear that show if you want to go online at www.808stateupdate.net. That is a part of the Madison Broadcasting Company, which I do very much appreciate their manao and their kokua in allowing me to use their studio to talk about these things as well as with the podcast. Final programming note, next week Saturday there will not be a Superfly Oz podcast. I'm going to be taking off some time because family is in town, so I'm going to be spending some time with my family here in Hawaii. Once again, www.politicshawaii.com is where you can find the Superfly Oz podcast. My name is Stan Fitchman, Superfly Oz himself. I'll see you in about 2 weeks, or I will see you on the radio on Monday at the AM 940 808 State Update. Aloha, and have a great week.